Hey, it's Sunny. This just welcome you to this free version of the Subbeacon, available on iTunes and Google Play and all wherever fine podcasts are found. We're a couple weeks behind here. We're talking about The Harder They Fall. I am actually taking a quick break from rewatching The Matrix Resurrections, which is what we're going to be talking about this week, to bone up for the episode this week. So. Should be a fun episode talking about The Matrix Resurrections. A mess. It's a mess of a movie. Big bomb at the box office, but lots of interesting stuff to discuss there. And the bonus episode this week, we're gonna be talking Knight Rider. Knight Rider's on Netflix now. Found a fun episode to watch. It involves David Hasselhoff and a goatee. So that's gonna be the bonus episode that'll go up on Monday. And that will be a Patreon exclusive forever. So if you enjoy this show and you want to get it in normal due time, sign up for the Patreon. It's at subbeacon.com. You'll get the free bonus episodes and you'll get all the other good stuff. You get everything. Go sign up. Go sign up now.
I know who you are. That love. The outlaw hunts down those who trespass against him. With no mercy.
Where is he?
Where is who?
Your boss.
My boss. Clearly, you don't know me.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Jonathan V. Lass and Sonny Bunch. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is now available through Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and don't forget about the Subbeacon merchandise store at tpublic.com. It's not too late. Maybe it is, but it's probably not. Order now.
It reminds me, I've got like $12 I need to send to you guys.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Hi, Merry Christmas.
That might get me a kale, it's like, Caesar.
It's like a full
with chicken.
That's like a full cob chopped. Oh, you can get the full cob.
What used $12. To be known as the Chinese chicken salad, and they changed it.
Boys, I got a question for you. I went into downtown Washington, D.C. this afternoon.
Ooh.
And had a business lunch at a fancy restaurant.
Uh-huh.
And I ordered a
was it chopped?
Shrimp. Caesar salads, an expensive $24 salad.
Oof, $24 salad.
May I ask where?
It's like one and a half salads from Trump.
Lincoln. Oh, Lincoln.
Okay. Oh, on like M and 19th or whatever that is? 20th?
15th.
Oh, the place that used to be around where we used to work. It
yes.
was like one over. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. And this salad was, you know how when you go to the grocery store in the salad section and you can buy bags of salad where it's chopped, or you can buy just the package
with
the hearts of romaine.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
With the lettuce. Well, this salad came with, which is like the big long thing of romaine
stalks.
There. And you had to cut it yourself.
Oh, you mean like the whole thing?
Was it like a wedge salad?
The whole
thing. Yes, yes, yes. That's why you need a fork and a knife. It's a fork and a knife deal.
And I just thought to myself, why am I paying $24 to cut my own damn salad when it chopped for only $18? They will do it for you.
Oh,
and by the way, also, you'll get a lot more salad because here you're losing like a fifth of the lettuce with this. What is that even called?
I think the stalk. The stalk. It's the stalk of the romaine.
For $24, they should not just.
No problem with that. No problem with saying that.
For $24, you should not only get the salad cut up, but they should chew it for you. They should pre-chew it for you and spit it in your mouth like a bird into a baby bird's mouth.
Four shrimp. Four shrimp.
Were they big shrimp?
Little shrimp.
They weren't prawns. They weren't prawns.
They were not prawns.
No, I don't care for that place, and I don't care for Teddy, which is the thing I was.
They're related. They're the same.
Yeah,
they're owned by the same thing.
Same.
Not a fan of either. It's true. Even I'm not a fan. So this is amazing. We all agree on this. I think what they want to give you the illusion that you're like cutting it like cutting into a steak. You're cutting into a salad because it's so.
Well, see, I like a good wedge salad.
Oh, sure,
like a whole.
An iceberg.
Yeah, like a whole, like half of a
where they
iceberg
pour the blue cheese
lettuce.
And the bacon on top.
That's a party.
Let me throw something at you, because Vic, I bet you do like Lincoln.
I've only been Lincoln there a couple times.
Is this? I bet you've never gone to the men's room at Lincoln. Oh. Because Lincoln is this weird, trendy, very... you go into the men's room, and it's got these four or five gigantic, like 3 feet by 4 feet, black urinals. And white pieces of erotica.
Oh.
Oh. Wait, like, I thought it doesn't explain. Have Lincoln, the like Lincoln murals, the like penny murals. It used to have like penny murals or something.
Yeah, not in the bathroom. In the bathroom, it's got these beautiful black and white pictures of incredibly buxom girls playing with one another.
I should. I changed my opinion of Lincoln, by the way.
It's a very strange decorating choice.
I've reminds seen, of, yes, I went that's to, interesting. That's very, reminds, yes. I like to, a little went, a little body.
I went to a, I stayed at a boutique hotel in Los Angeles on the Sunset Strip way back in like 2007.
The standard hotel?
Seven or eight. No, it wasn't the standard. I was like, the standard was too expensive. The standard was like $400 a night or something. I stayed at a place that was like 150. But it was I don't know, maybe it was like a mile further west than the standard.
You were at the Ramada Inn.
It was like La Cienega and Sunset, like right at the corner there. I don't know that the hotel is there anymore, but the pictures in the room, just nude girls, just nude women, just like naked women on the walls. And I was like, what if I was a lady and staying in this room? Are there rooms for the ladies that are just like dudes with their drunk out?
I'll tell you what, whatever you do, Sonny, don't bring a black light to that room. If there's nude pictures of ladies on the wall,
just naked ladies. And I was like, first of all, well, I was like, I'm 25, so I really appreciate this decorating choice, but I don't quite understand it. It did not make a ton of
Vic,
sense.
You should go out and do an undercover investigation of this hotel and just see if it's like that in every room.
Right, in every room.
Go room to room.
You know, it reminds me, the craziest thing I'd ever seen in a restroom or a public bathroom was when I lived in Vienna. There's a section of the city where all the nightclubs are called the Bermuda Dreieck, which is the Bermuda Triangle. And there was like some sort of bar called the Cactus or something like this. And everyone's like, you got to check out the bathroom. So I go check out the bathroom. And it's a urinal, not the one that goes all the way down to the floor, but a normal urinal. But a mannequin's legs, woman's legs on each side of the urinal, like... haunched up. And so when you pee, you're going right between the mannequin's legs. It's insane.
I thought you were going to say Buca di Beppo, because the Buca di Beppo men's
room. Yeah, that's another one. That had nice...
covered, like, every single inch of wall space has pictures of, like, four-year-old boys peeing.
Oh.
Okay. It's just like all these black and white pictures of like little Italian four-year-old
Italian,
boys.
You know, it's Italian. It's so, you know.
And it looks like Captain Corelli's mandolin or something. And I got to say...
uncomfortable.
I don't like it.
No.
I don't like
disgusting.
It.
It's a little bit inappropriate there.
It's disgusting.
Inappropriate. Otherwise, you're well, JVL?
Otherwise, I'm well. You can refer to me as Coach JVL.
Oh, you got it because you got conscripted... and now you're actually doing it.
My agent was able to come to terms with the general manager, and I have full control of baseball operations.
Oh, that's good.
So that means that I have control both of game day decisions, but also roster management and the draft board. I'm going to have my own sabermetrics team that I bring in for this, and I'm pretty excited. We got a couple of games against a home and home against St. Mary's of the Blind. I like our chances.
You know, you're like what's his name from
John Many Saints of Newark.
I was gonna say never. Well, you could be that. I was gonna say Never Been Kissed. Remember Drew Barrymore's brother? He ends up at the very end of the movie. He becomes the baseball coach. He's living the dream.
We'll talk about this later as the season progresses. But I'm very excited.
Congratulations, very excited. Congratulations, thank Sonny. You. What happened in the parking lot of the Cinemark 17?
Oh, yes. Thank you for remembering.
I wrote it down.
I would have forgotten.
Couldn't see your head.
So I'm, as you know, I'm a degenerate.
Yes, yes, you are.
It's very funny. I meshed out there while JVL's hands were doing this, and it just froze in that position. It was very wonderful. But I'll have to delete that.
So something's afoot at the Circle K. Go ahead.
So I go. I'm a degenerate. I go to the Cinemark 17 in Dallas, Texas, at 9:40 p.m. On a Sunday night to go see The Matrix, not The Matrix Resurrections. But The Matrix in IMAX, because because I wanted to see it in IMAX. I'll just say that I would have rather have just seen it in 35 millimeter, as I saw it in the theaters three times back in the day. Neither here nor there. I'm not here to talk about that. When I got to the lot at, you know, 9:37 or whatever, because, you know, it's not like you have to show up early anymore. I got out of my car and I like looked to the left and I saw an empty Crown Royal bottle. I was like, oh, somebody was having a party here. It was like in the little grassy median area,
sure,
you know.
Sure.
So I took note of that as I was walking in and I watched the movie. I get back out. It's, you know, it's like 12:30. It's 12:40.
Yeah, it's
some absurdly late time of night, because not only do they show like a full run of
trailers,
they showed the trailer for the Matrix Resurrections twice. I saw that twice. So it was just an extra 2.5 minutes.
Sure.
So anyway,
30 minutes.
Anyway, I get back out to the car. I get in my car. I back up to drive away. And as I'm backing up, what do I hear explode behind me?
Oh no.
But the Crown Royal bottle that some animal had taken off the median and put behind my tire so I would drive over it on the way home. Now, this happened, and my first reaction was, what the fuck was that? Second reaction was, oh, it's that Crown Royal bottle. My third reaction was, whoever did this should be put in the electric chair and executed.
Yes.
Because they are a psychopath. They are a sociopathic animal who is not fit for human society. And has no business being alive anymore. It's one thing to
That's
key
awful.
A car, you know, scrawl, you know, some words into it to show your displeasure with somebody for their parking job or whatever. It's one thing to like
clean me on the dirty window. It's one thing to
find somebody and murder them and like torture them in your basement, because at least you're there and you're experiencing it. You're getting like a little, you know, you're getting a little thrill out of it. But this person just put it behind my wheel and left. Like, what do they get out of that? What do they get? They get nothing except the knowledge that somebody somewhere may have been hurt by what they did. Now, luckily, my tires did not. I did not get shards of glass in my tires.
Oh,
thank goodness. I didn't get a flat. And even if I had, it's really not the end of the world, because the tread's pretty low on them. I need to get them. I keep my you know, the inspection guy keeps being like, you know, you're just barely passing here. So I'm like, yeah, I'm going to need them soon anyway. But when that happened, man, I could have murdered 17 people. If you had lined up 17 people who had done this before against a wall, I would have machine gunned all of them.
Yeah.
Was The Kid Detective the movie in which Adam Brody catches a bunch of like 12-year-old punks?
No, you're thinking of Under the Silver Lake.
Under the Silver Lake.
Oh.
Let me tell you.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
I would have been in favor of you beating the piss out of the 12-year-old boys who did this.
Yeah. I mean,
question.
Before
you went to see the movie, you saw the Crown Royal bottle. It was empty.
Empty.
And
bottle.
So it's not like it's not like drunks were finishing it off and then they put it there. Somebody just went out of their way to then move it to put it on your tire.
Somebody saw it there, picked it up, moved it under the tire, the back,
terrible.
The driver's rear driver's side tire
awful.
Of my car,
that's
and
awful.
Was like, this is a good place for this. I hope he pops a tire.
I hope they die of COVID.
I hope they die of COVID as well. I hope they get the really bad COVID, the one that like makes them linger for months.
Not long COVID. Long COVID.
No, I want them to get long COVID and then die of COVID. That's what I want. I literally was like, at that hour,
I mean, they're up to no good.
Here's a serious question. So I am assuming in my mind's eye that this is punk kids.
I would
kid thing to do.
I think it's absolutely something
could
that could be done.
Anybody
from the age of 15
somethings.
To 50 could do something
that's
like
how,
this. I'd make no...
I agree. Could be kids in their 20s.
could it could be somebody in their 20s, could be somebody in their 30s, could just be some asshole.
Yeah.
It could just be literally just a sociopathic asshole of any age.
Maybe
probably they, young, though. It's probably maybe, somebody in their like late teens or early 20s.
Maybe they got pissed off by your coexist bumper sticker.
Yeah, well, I did. I do have my Beto 2024 sticker.
That would it.
Beto 2022 for governor. You know, some Abbott fan was like, "Not on my, not in my Cinemark 17
Beto.
Parking lot, boy."
Beto.
Okay. How crowded was the parking lot?
It was.
Were
it
you
was
the
more...
only car there?
No.
That's what I was picturing. Because who would the right mind would see the Matrix on a Sunday night?
Well, there are 17 screens there, so there's a lot of things to see. A lot of people going to see West Side Story or whatever. It was not empty. It was not empty. It was like I would say it was like probably you know there were probably 40 cars in the lot, 50 cars in the lot.
So how long will you from here on out? Check behind every one of your tires before leaving a parking lot at night. Is this going to linger with you for weeks or have you already written off?
Well, so it's funny that you mentioned this because this almost happened to me. This almost happened to me like 4 or 5 years ago. I was at a wedding in Kentucky and I parked in, you know, like I parked in like a big parking lot area and just left my car there and, you know, went to the wedding. And when I came out from the wedding, somebody had done almost exactly this, had put a beer bottle right behind, like laid it on its side, put it right behind the tire with the intention of like me driving over it and and popping the tire. And I saw it because I was walking around and I moved it. I was like, oh, well, it was lucky that I saw that. And I've never checked again since then.
You know what you should have done? You should have taken that beer bottle home with you. Gone down to the Batcave, put it in the special machine to reassemble
the fingerprints,
then traced the person who did it, and then murdered them with the beer bottle because
the
that shit is the worst. Unacceptable.
This happened to Kate. This is back in 2012, and she went to Whole Foods, and when she came back, she noticed somebody had wedged a bottle, like a beer bottle, underneath her rear tire.
Who does this?
Because and she's pretty sure it's because she had her very offensive Romney Ryan bumper sticker.
Well, that
but
sense.
You know in
sense.
Arlington.
No,
that
I mean
might,
I would never.
That
I
might
mean,
as well this, say Richard. I voted for Richard Spencer. That's what
I mean. Look, I would
say
look, they're like I kind of look. I don't condone it, but at least I understand it to a certain extent. That like you know if you have like. If you have political statements on your bumper or whatever, but I wouldn't put a bumper sticker on my car if you paid me $1 million to do it. I wouldn't put a bumper sticker on my car if I own the cheapest piece of shit car
Let
out
me
there
think
because,
about
because
it.
I don't
Let me
do
think.
I don't do bumper stickers. That's
I
like
had,
that's not a thing I do.
You know what I don't have anymore? I used to have I had Georgetown. That's what I put on my back window. Oh, sorry. That was on my Jeep. Sorry.
I'm going to drive out to Arlington tonight with
in,
a couple beer bottles.
I'm just going to put and other things. You're
put
be like,
beer
all
bottles
sorts
there,
of stuff
put a
all over
potato
my car.
In the tailpipe.
Yeah, everything. Yeah, right.
Put
exactly.
a dildo in the tailpipe.
Well, hey, save that one. Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, thank you for reminding me because I wanted to rant. I wanted
that
to rant for a few
awful.
Minutes about that because it is, I like, again,
this
I really,
country. Joe
I
Biden's
firmly,
America, a place where hooligans run around putting... Putting Crown
believe.
Royal bottles behind
yeah, that's
people's
a bad one
tires.
Because
and it's a Crown Royal
that's
bottle.
A,
it's
a big
like,
one. It's
not
big
like
it's thick.
A. It's not like it's like a wine bottle or like a
no,
like a
no,
you know like a
no,
Miller Lite bottle or something.
No,
like it was
short,
like a big chunky
fat.
Bottle.
You didn't see this when the Republicans were in power.
No, it's only now. It's only now. It's true.
Victorina, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing fine. So you know. Because it's the holiday season, I've been fairly responsible about Ubering from place to place now, right? Going out.
Oh, God.
Yeah, no. So what happened was a couple of weeks ago, I get in an Uber, and it was during the day. And then I come back, and I was talking to the driver. And
you said,
no. I was perfectly fine. But I said to him, we were having a conversation. I don't know what about. And then we're talking about like where he's from. And he says, he mentions that he's Armenian, but from Turkey. I said, oh, that's really interesting. And he says, yes, I told you this last week when you were my customer in the car. I said, really? He goes, yes, sir, we've had this conversation before. and I did not remember. And he said, well, I said, really? Really last week? I go, yes, sir. I picked you up in the city. I go, oh. And then he says, you seemed really tired at the time. Well, like sleepy, yes. I said, well, I must have been working on something in the middle of the, you
it
know.
Was 11 o'clock it in was, the morning, sir.
It was right now. I don't know what time it was. He goes, but you seem very tired. It's yes, I sleep. Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, by tired, you mean I blacked out? You know, is that what you mean? So that I don't know.
Did
I don't
you
know,
feel
have
judged
a problem?
By your Uber driver?
What?
Did you check your score afterward to see if your average
I had to make sure to give him a special tip in the 5 stars because, like, thank you for bringing that up. Anyway.
It does seem to me that the Uber app ought to optimize so that it never matches you with the same driver twice.
Or it should give you a heads weird. Up and say you rode with Tony, I assume is his name.
Yeah.
You rode with
yeah,
Joe.
Yeah, Tony.
Joseph.
Chad.
You rode with Rob.
Arthur.
You rode with
Arthur?
Rob
Did you say Arthur?
10
Arthur.
Days
Arthur.
Ago.
Yes, that's right.
I think they should do that. That would be nice.
Yeah, what's his name? Not Hobson, but anyway. Okay.
Shaw.
Yeah, that's Robson Shaw. But I do want to say it's a nice thing. Thank goodness for Uber to get people like me off the road. I just want to say that it's nice for our kind of people. It's
how are you holding up during this holiday season? We're in the thick of it for you.
This is
the hardest time of the year for you.
I'm pacing myself. I think after like the 22nd or 3rd, all bets are off. I've been pretty good.
Twinges.
No, I ran today but again, you know, the worst is yet to come. You know,
I assume you've been avoiding
shellfish.
The fried shrimp and the oysters.
It's starting. That's going to start up, I think, really soon. And oh no, I've been having a lot of cured meats.
How many times have you been to the Palm in the last 6 weeks?
Maybe once or twice, and then again tomorrow. But other than that. Is totally
so
fine. Martinis,
times.
Something
any,
like that.
Any seafood towers on the horizon for you?
I would love that, but we'll see. Oysters, maybe, you know. But anyway, I had a joke, I lost it, but the punchline was that there was a place for us. Speaking of which, over the weekend, West Side Story danced its way to the top of the box office.
It was number one, wasn't it?
Yes, with a whopping 10.6 million. Followed by Encanto.
It made more money than any other movie in America.
Yes, it's huge. Followed by Encanto with 10 million. And in third place, Ghostbusters Afterlife, that kids show.
Hanging in there.
With 7.1 million. Box office thoughts.
So on The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood, I talked to a guy called David Herron, who runs this site called The Quorum. Now, if you are a fan of Box Office Mojo, you will enjoy The Quorum. It is a site that makes public tracking numbers. Mm. It talks about, you know, who's excited to see what.
Breaks it down.
And makes those numbers public, which have never really been public before. They're pretty tightly held by NRG, which is the group that generally does this sort of stuff. So they have a lot of interesting data there. And what he said to me was he was very hopeful that West Side Story would perform well with the two audiences that have been most hesitant to return to theaters. Those two audiences are women, just in general, mm-hmm. and audiences over the age of 50 or 60 or so.
Sure.
So basically, like, if you're a woman over the age of 60, you have not gone back to the theaters at all.
Is your moment.
But he was very hopeful that, you know, look, this is it's tracking pretty well. This is the sort of movie that appeals to women. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe women just haven't been going back because it's movies like Venom and, mm-hmm. you know, Shang-Chi and Eternals. Sure. These are comic book movies. They mostly appeal to younger men. That is the quadrant that has been well served, and the other quadrants have not. And I haven't talked to David since the numbers came out, but he has to be disappointed because $10.5 million for the opening of a Steven Spielberg movie would be bad just in general. But this is a $100 million movie. They probably spent another $100 million on prints and advertising and publicity, and it just
Sonny,
it's a disaster.
This would have been bad in 1975.
I mean, it's a no. Well, I'm,
you mean like not adjusted for inflation?
Yes. No. I mean that but it would have been bad. It would have been bad for 95 certainly. If this had happened in 1995, this would have been a very bad number.
So, you know, our buddy Richard Rushfield wrote about this earlier this week, and he said he's a huge fan of West Side Story. Took his daughter to see it without prejudging her at all. He said, as they left the theater, his daughter looked at him and said, "They both fucking die? Are you kidding?" And he said, you know, when you put it that way, you know, I, of course, you know, everybody over the age of
Romeo and Juliet
40 realizes that West Side Story is Romeo and Juliet.
Mm-hmm, right.
But on the other hand, that is not a crowd-pleasing story then. That tells people, hey, thank you for spending 2.5 hours of your life here and for spending $18 on your ticket. The two leads you've been rooting for are both dead. Enjoy your afternoon. Bye-bye.
Well, they're not both dead. Maria's still alive at the end.
Whatever.
Tony dies. No, but it's right. Tony dies basically in Maria's arms. And it's funny that you mentioned this because I read that as well. But that is also like the exact thing I was thinking as I walked out of the theater was like, I forgot that he dies at the end of this story, and I am like slightly bummed out now. This might have like a very high cinema score, and it did because it's really, look, I say this as somebody who does not like musicals just in general. It's very well done. It's a very good musical.
That's a big deal for you to say that.
And Steven Spielberg directs the shit out of this movie. Yeah. It looks great.
Who is the cinematographer? Janusz Kaminski?
Yeah, Janusz Kaminski. It's his good. Has been his go-to since like Schindler's List.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and say probably Ryan.
Look, it's a good movie, but it's a bummer. It's not a movie that you come out saying like everybody's got to go see this one.
As Richard said, you're not sending your audience out of the theater with a valedictory in the way that The Greatest Showman did, which is how you get theater kids who want to come back and see it 5 times because it's so great.
And it's a feel good. You got to think about, you know what I always think about, and Kate talks about this all the time because it's on TV a lot, the end of Back to the Future, the first one, you know, it's so corny, but you know, the DeLorean flies at you and then
it's your kids, Marty.
And what does it say? Like the end or something like that. And then it kicks right into the Huey Lewis song. And so everyone's like, you know, the whole thing. And then everybody comes out of the theater feeling great. You know, it's not that kind
Wait,
of
does
movie.
It does it say the end or does it, did say, it say
to be continued? That's what it says.
It says to be continued. Yeah.
And then the music kicks in and it's like, this is the thing. So there's something to be said.
Yeah. Do you remember what's
your
the
kids, Marty?
What's the great Kirsten Dunst, Eliza Dushku cheerleader movie?
Bring it on.
Ends
with the outtakes.
With them, did the outtakes of them doing Hey Mickey.
Hey Mickey.
And it's just.
That's right.
Look,
Tony Basil.
You know what? If you've got a good movie and then you throw a little bit up on the end of it to really make people enjoy themselves as a living theater, that will help.
I love that so much I passed out.
I was maybe kind of rooting against West Side Story. So
You mean in terms of its success, its odds of success?
Yeah, I hated the... Hated West Side. Okay. I've always hated West Side Story. I hated everything about it.
I was worried that I was... when I suggested we see something else, I was worried that you were looking forward to it, JVL. And I was like, sorry. Okay.
All right. Pass.
Yeah. I don't feel so bad now.
Okay. Pass.
Why do you hate West Side Story?
There's probably some parental associations with it.
Okay.
I was going to ask if you had starred in it.
Leave it at that.
I believe my mother viewed it as like the greatest movie ever made or something at one point in my life.
Got it.
So, you know, fuck her.
Was that one of your productions when you were growing up or no?
No, we didn't do West Side Story. I don't, you know, I was in some high school at some point and saw that they had the poster for having done West Side Story. I just thought to myself, are you serious? This is gotta be kidding me.
Just do Romeo and Juliet. Come on.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So you were rooting against it.
Go ahead,
I was rooting against it. And I have to say the $10 million is better and more satisfying than anything I could possibly have imagined. Because that's a disaster.
By the way, John Podhoretz just stopped listening.
John is going to be in my texts.
Oh, that's it.
John will be texting me 45 seconds from now.
Oh, man.
I'm a little bit bummed by the result. Not because I'm a big musical fan, as you guys know. Yeah. I did like it, but it's not like I loved it. It's not going to make my top 10 or anything. But like,
it's no pig. I enjoyed it fine.
But like, well, it's no pig. That's for sure.
Man, you are it's on no a pig. Roll today.
You should watch Pig, Jamie. Well, it's on Hulu. It's on Hulu right now. You can watch it in HD.
As soon as we finish the show, I'm gonna jump to it.
You'll love it. You'll love it. I think you'd really really like it. But you know, it's neither here nor there. I'm bummed because it's bad. It's bad for movie theaters. I mean, Richard Rushfield also made this point. It's bad for movie theaters for this to happen, and it is not a good sign. Luckily, everyone will forget about it when Spider-Man: No Way Home makes $250 million this weekend.
Okay, yeah, so that's going to defy the whole sort of COVID.
Or 70.
It's not going to make no.
No.
I bet this movie, I'll go out on a limb and say it doubles the previous weekend Marvel. High that we had seen so far, which was Venom.
Yeah.
So you think this is going to be over 180?
I think it'll be over 180. I think it'll get close to 200. I was skeptical of this pre-COVID numbers and stuff, but just looking at the number of sellouts on Thursday and the fact that they are adding screens to this movie, in a way I have not seen since Endgame.
I'm seeing it on Sunday, and when I did the, you know, with the kids, and when I did the, you select the seats, it was almost all packed.
Yeah.
So it's
going to be very, I mean, 180 is like my, is a reach prediction, but I actually, I think there's a decent chance it hits that.
So, as you know, as our listeners now know, we are not talking about West Side Story.
No.
Although we just did in a way. Instead, we're talking about a movie that, Sonny, you suggested, I think.
Well, J.B. Allen wanted to.
That's right. Earlier on, you mentioned it.
You mentioned it a couple weeks ago, we didn't do it then.
It's been on Netflix for a little bit now. It's not in theaters. Was it ever in theaters?
No.
Yeah, it played in theaters for a couple weeks, but like, I mean, it played in like a
dozen
couple short screens.
Okay.
I mean, it was.
And that movie is The Harder They Fall.
Horrible title.
Idris Elba.
And Idris Delroy Elba Linda. And Jonathan Majors.
Do we think Idris Elba stars in it? What does he have?
Well, he's
20
it's,
lines.
It's very much. It's very much an ensemble cast, and they filmed a lot of this during the pandemic, which is interesting. But
don't tell me that it was all green screen, because I really thought
a lot
it
of
was,
it was green. Oh, there was a lot of green screen. Well, man. But you didn't know, so it
no,
doesn't really
I
matter.
Was like, oh, they're in Monument Valley or wherever. You know, I mean, that's nice. They went out there and. Wow.
Well, they did. I mean, they filmed a lot of it outdoors, but they also green screened a lot of the. It's interesting. They green screened a lot of the internal stuff with the crowds because they couldn't have crowds of extras, like milling about the set. So, like a lot of that stuff was added, or it wasn't CGI, but they added in people.
Wow, that's crazy.
You know, kind of. It's really interesting what they did, but that's neither here nor there. So, The Harder They Fall. I would say the first 15 minutes of The Harder They Fall are among my favorite movies of the year. And then it goes off the rails a little bit after that. But the first 15 minutes...
How about a Big Boy review, Sonny?
Okay, so the Harder They Fall is a revisionist Western. It's kind of a blaxploitation / Western starring Jonathan Majors as Nat Love. And the film opens when he is a young boy. He's like 12 or something like that. And a faceless man comes to his house and in a sort of nihilistic No Country for Old Men style scene, like super tense. This faceless stranger murders this boy's father and mother and does it right in front of him. He can't stop him. And this is what kind of sets him on his life.
Takes out a razor blade,
carves a cross.
Does an Inglorious Bastards on him.
And then we flash forward several years later, and Jonathan Majors is now playing the role of Nat Love. And the second segment of this movie is like a Django Unchained style bloodbath. It's like cartoony, violent. A guy is getting shot and like flips over, and you know, there's fountains of blood. And the title of the movie, The Harder They Fall, is punctuated with a series of gunshots. It's super stylized. It's very music video like, with the you know, editing to the beat of the gunfire and the music. And again, I love this. It's like silly and over the top and fun. And then the third The third part is like kind of a more traditional, like more traditional 1970s style Western, like a Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, where you have a couple of, you know, competing gangs kind of talking shit to each other and getting into a shootout in a box canyon. It's very traditional and traditionally shot. And again, the movie slides through these three different genres of Western, these sub-genres of Western, like really effortlessly. It's really well done. I really enjoyed it. And then it gets bogged down. We get bogged down. We go into a town and
bogged down at the end. You mean?
Right after that. I mean, Nat Love takes his gang into town and they're trying to figure out, you know, what to do with this money. And they're like, oh, we can't steal from the, what's the guy's name? We can't steal from the Rufus Buck gang. That's Idris Elba, who is at the beginning of the film imprisoned on a train. There's a big train breakout on the C.W. Bozeman carriage. Did you guys notice that little Easter egg?
No.
Named after Chadwick Bozeman.
Oh, that's very nice.
Very, very nice. Very nice.
I mean, they were transporting him from where to where?
They're transporting him. He's been imprisoned. He's been captured in the midst of a robbery, and
so
the
army
is taking him somewhere.
Do trains often stop because a person on a horse is standing on the tracks, or do the trains often just plow right through and cut them to pieces?
This is usually why the villain ties up the person on the train tracks, you know, because the train's not going to stop.
I don't think any of that. I think that whole train breakout sequence sucked.
Horrible.
And could have been done away with.
I agree.
There's a lot of stuff in this movie that could have been done away with. All the stuff involving Zazie Beetz, who plays what's her name? Shotgun Mary, or I can't even remember. Stagecoach Mary. Thank you. And the love interest there, all that could have gone. The most interesting thing about this movie, and I'll just get to this and then we can move on. The most interesting thing about this movie is the town that the Rufus Buck gang has built, which is kind of an area for free blacks to come.
Redwood.
In the immediate post, it's called Redwood. Mm-hmm. It's like Deadwood, but Redwood. And it is a city that free blacks can come to and, you know, try to make their fortune. But because Rufus Buck has been in prison, the town has been sold out by the man he left in charge. It's going to be auctioned off to the white folks. So the Rufus Buck gang is trying to steal enough money to keep the town solvent, and B, tax the citizens. And the citizens are like, we're not paying your taxes. And Rufus Buck shoots them. And there's a very interesting, I just want to read one passage of dialogue here that kind of gets at what Redwood is about. This is Rufus Buck, who again is played by Idris Elba, talking. You think I made Redwood for myself? To what end? Redwood ain't a hiding place because I don't hide. It ain't a dream. I don't dream. You know what it is? It's an example. It's an example for others to follow. And you are an enemy of progress. And he shoots that enemy of progress dead. Again, I find this really interesting, and I wish they had done more with it. But the townsfolk just disappear after that. They disappear entirely from the movie. There's no, like, Quick in the Dead style sequence where we see them, you know, hoping for their freedom from their oppressors.
No, they just all scatter.
There's no, it's not like Unforgiven where the town is kind of like living under the thumb of Gene Hackman. Like, they don't do anything with it. And again, it's a really interesting idea, and it's just immediately discarded for like a kind of lame and lazy shootout at the end of the movie. I mean, like a good shootout, but not as good as like Open Range, I thought was a better like closing shootout, or not as good as the Quick and the Dead. I mean, there were a lot of missed opportunities with this movie. Mm-hmm. And it has the standard Netflix problem, which is that it's 30% too long. It is at least 20. It's at least 20. There are 25 easily excisable minutes. It felt like a first draft that needed another pass, and it needed somebody to be like, here's the interesting theme of this film. You need to tease it out. Need to tease it out. So anyway, that's my review.
Thank you, Sonny. JVL, what did you think? You were interested in this early on.
Yeah, I was interested from the trailer.
Sure.
And because I thought to myself, a blaxploitation
Western
with a bunch of great actors in it. This looks super cool. And it is, as Sonny said, the whole thing is highly stylized, and the individual parts of it are just wonderful. Mm-hmm. The costuming is great. Mm-hmm. The actors in it are, with one exception, fantastic.
Let me guess the exception. The girl who plays Cuffy.
No.
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 The hot shot on the Nat Love gang who's just wrong for the part.
Yeah.
Well, he's just wrong for the part because you never actually believe that he's fast.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And it's the whole is a lot less than the sum of its parts. And you know, I zeroed in exactly on what you said while I was watching it, Sonny, that the most interesting idea is, wait a minute, hold on. So Rufus, whatever his name is, Idris Elba.
Rufus Buck.
Rufus Buck has built this town, and he talks about why he built it. And he sounds a little bit like, you know, like the Soviets, right? I mean, the Soviets always insisted that, you know, you go back to the Bolsheviks. I'm thinking about all this because I'm rereading an Alan First novel about the 1930s, and it's fantastic.
Yes.
You know, the idea was like, look, progress is really important, and we're doing this for the greater good, and we just may have to kill 3 million of you in order to do it. I'm sorry, right? And that is, and we get that, so, and you're like interested in, okay, so what is he thinking, right? With what is the, but it's barely even explained why it is that the town is being sold or something. But none of that makes sense, and it's dropped as soon as it's raised, and it moves on, and there are too many characters, so you don't get enough with any. Like Regina King is,
I love her. Regina King is great,
but her character just isn't. It's missing like 30% of what it needs to be a fully fleshed out character, so you can really be invested in her as a bad guy, right? And like, there's a moment where
they pulls off the crazy eyes.
She pulls off the crazy. She's great. Regina King is great in everything she does. There's a moment when Nat Love and the girl pretending to be a boy go to rob a bank in a white town.
Yes.
And the entire town is white. Meaning like
it's a literal
white town.
It is literally white.
The ground.
Again, everything about like all this, you know, the air juggling, as you say, in the opening sequence in the little mission church where Nat Love kills the bad guy with the scorpion on his hand and he's sort of shot in the air juggled. Everything about that stuff is really neat and really great. And yet the movie's it's weightless.
It's a mess.
It is a mess. It's weightless and it has nothing to say. And it's filled with really interesting performances and really interesting actors, and it looks like $1 million. And at the same time, it's utterly forgettable.
Yeah.
I do want to highlight that this really does have one of the great casts. I mean, I love Jonathan Majors, who folks might recognize most recently from he was the star of Lovecraft Country, but he was also he's the guy who played the Kang the Conqueror, the character at the end of the Loki miniseries, which was interesting. But also, again, Idris Elba, fantastic. But all we haven't even mentioned Lakeith Stanfield, who plays Cherokee Bill.
He's great.
He's
fantastic.
The best.
Oh, yeah.
He's probably the best of the villain characters.
You wanted to know more about him because he's on screen. That's right. The amount of time he's on screen, you wonder, you know, it's complex and you wanted to know more about him. That's
He doesn't look like Johnny Ringo. Here's another thing.
Delroy Lindo.
I love that guy. Anytime he gets work, I love it.
Yeah.
So the movie ends with a big reveal, which, can we talk about it? Is that all right? Can we say spoilers?
Yeah, spoilers if you're.
It ends with a big reveal, which tries to turn the entire story into a meditation on fathers and sons and the idea of the sins of the father being visited upon the son. And then, even within the context of that reveal, it drops the idea 30 seconds later. Right, so there's this big moment where it turns out that Rufus is actually Nat's half brother, and the reason he killed this man is because this man was his dad, and his man was a monster. But then the dad reformed, and the reason he cut him the cross into his head so that he would know him when he eventually, you know, they came to meet, and they're like two trains headed in the same. And it's this like, well, okay, so this is kind of heavy stuff for a moment, And then 30 seconds after it's over, Nat Love is riding off into the sunset with Zazie Beetz. And the whole idea of, well, can he get out of this trap? It's just dropped.
Yeah.
It's just dropped. And Zazie Beetz, who I love, and she is almost always the best thing in, the best part of everything she's in. And I really, truly believe she's going to be a movie star someday. She just hasn't found the role to make her a movie star yet.
Right.
And in this, she is, it is a thankless role. She has nothing to do in this movie.
It's a garbage role. It's a garbage role. The character's underwritten.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. I don't, there was never a single moment when I cared about her relationship with Nat Love in the slightest. Yeah. Did not care even a little bit.
Vic, how did it do for the quadrants with you, buddy?
It was a real mixed bag.
Good violence, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So plot was an A. I understood it. Okay. There was one twist at the end, but I got it. I got the twist.
Well, they spell it out for you pretty clearly. It's
helped.
Not like there's
two
a
things
lot of
that help now. It's not like, you know, Wild Things where they can do a credit scene and they can tell you what happens in, you know, the movie. But they do when you they jump for, at least when they jump from town to town, I know where I'm going. Okay, I get it. Okay.
Well, it says it right there.
It helped in huge letters. Very helpful to me because, of course, I can't see as well anymore. Okay. Duration is a D. Man, I was almost enough. It is a long movie. Long movie. Action violence is definitely, that was an A plus for action and violence. It's a lot. It was like Wild Bunch level. But, of course, I'm beginning to notice this again. It's not as bad as some of these other movies we've been watching lately where there's a lot of violence. But it's like, it's not, I don't know how much of it is squibs versus how much is CGI blood, and I hate
it's all. It's most of it is CGI blood. I mean, the shootout in the church is almost. I guarantee you, is almost entirely
I hate
CGI
that,
blood.
Okay,
if
it's
not
just,
entirely
doesn't
CGI
seem
blood.
Realistic. These old movies that you know, you watch any of these old movies, and it's amazing to watch them because it just has that. You know, your eyes pick up on these things,
you
and
go,
then sex nudity.
Like, yeah. Go back to like some of the Sam Peckinpah stuff.
Oh yeah, exactly.
There's
I was
a famous
about, like,
story
Wild
about
Bunch.
Him blowing up a lizard. On set, where the idea was like somebody shoots a lizard,
right?
So they
right,
strapped the bunch of explosive to a lizard and blew it up.
Yeah,
and this is wrong, of course. This is why we have those things at the end of
the
end of every credit sequence. You know, the SPCA has certified that no animal. Mm-hmm. The reason they do that is because once upon a time, some filmmakers would actually like fucking. Kill animals on screen.
I always you always wondered about the horses. What was the casualty rate for horses? You know, and then
I think there's a famous God. Who is the Russian filmmaker? The guy who made Solaris, Tarkovsky, just like shot a horse, just had a horse shot on film.
I hope not in Solaris. Okay, and sex nudity was an F. It's a rated R movie. So you would think there'd be brothels and a lot of brothel action. There was more action in Unforgiven. Than there was in this, and Zazie Beetz has her little bustier, and
just wasn't enough for you. That,
come on, man! It was just you know okay. I do have a thought, which is the very beginning of the movie. There's so many westerns that open this way, and if you found yourself like somehow cosmically transported into a western, and it's at the beginning where there's a happy family enjoying a lovely day. Get the fuck out. Just start running because you know, hostels. Oh, remember we watched Hostels open that way? Just like, oh no, something terrible is going to happen. And it's awful. It's always some sort of terrible massacre. So get out of there. It was, and then
how do you wait? So I'm sorry. In your hypothetical, do you know you're in a movie?
Yes.
Do you wake?
Yes.
You wake up and you like
that,
you're like, oh, I'm in a cinematic endeavor.
Yes, like
and I'm eating happily at a table with my family.
I believe it's like the John Ritter movie with Eugene Levy. I think it's called
Stay Tuned.
Yes, very good, very good. I was going to say Switching Channels, but that's entirely different.
That. I saw Stay Tuned approximately 17,000 times one summer on HBO.
Yes,
it played on a loop.
Very good, very good. That's exactly right. It's like, oh my gosh. And then you just leave it on. You just left it on because you wanted to get to the part where he comes, you know, he's all of a sudden in Three's Company. So anyway, if you see yourself in that situation, run.
I didn't get that joke at the
time. Okay.
Of course. I was like 11.
Still before your time. JVL, when I love Delroy Lindo as well. And do you remember Larry Miller's story about when he put when he did Pros and Cons, right?
No.
He did Pros and Cons with Delroy Lindo.
Mm-hmm.
And because I think I probably had mentioned something about the crazy eyes, because he had crazy eyes. It's less now. He's older. But he went to Delroy Lindo's trailer to talk to him about making some sort of suggestion about his character. And like Delroy Lindo, like the door flies open. He comes right out and he has to stare. And Larry was like, so I was thinking, never mind. I'll come back later. Just because it's so intense and terrifying, you know. But here is very it was a good role for him.
Well, you know what? It was a good role for him, but the role doesn't pay off. No, right? I mean, we are
too many things going on.
Shown that he is such an enormous badass.
Yeah,
but then we never really get to live with him when he.
That's right.
Yeah,
none of the characters get nearly enough time to breathe in this movie. I just like they're you could do a whole movie about Bass Reeves.
Right.
You do a whole thing. He's a really interesting guy. These are all, another interesting thing about this movie is that these are all based on real people. These are all based on real guys. And Bass Reeves was, I think, the first black marshal or deputy marshal, you know, west of the Mississippi, but he was like, he killed a bunch of guys. He arrested a bunch of bad guys. Like, he's an interesting guy that they could make a whole movie about.
Yeah.
And it just like he's just kind of there to be Delroy Lindo. And I love the fact that he's there to be Delroy Lindo, because I could watch Delroy Lindo do stuff all day long. I don't think we talked about the Five Bloods, but he's great in that. Mm-hmm. He should have won a bunch of awards. And you know, he just again is given nothing to do in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, again, the idea is interesting. I had read somewhere that's I think one out of four cowboys I think was black. You know, post Civil War, you know, they all were sort of these cattle hands, and they all went out west because then they can, you know, do their thing out there. And anyway, but it gets lost in the weeds. Do you have any other thoughts on this?
It's just disappointing. It's just my one big picture idea about this movie is that there is a good movie within it. It just needed a strong executive somewhere at a studio who could say, I love what you're going for here. You need to do another pass on this script, and we need or after it had been shot, like, okay, we need to take out 30 minutes of this movie because 30 minutes of this movie doesn't work.
Or make it more about Idris Elba or whatever.
And Netflix does not have that.
Problem with the streaming age is that there is no quality control. And the reason there's quality control is because the business model doesn't need it. The business model views quality control as unnecessary cost. And, you know, this is actually, I'm glad you said this, that you're disappointed, Sonny, because that's how I felt about this. But 85% of Netflix movies just pass over my retinas without leaving any mark.
Yeah.
And I won't remember this one in a week either, but I was disappointed because there is a good movie in there. Mm-hmm. And there's so much talent on screen. And there's clearly talent behind the camera. And, you know, like if this had been a Warner's movie 10 years ago, right, this would have turned out to be a different product and it would have been better. There.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Onward.
Bummer.
That's okay.
We should have talked West Side Story.
Yeah.
I would have, again, I was mildly interested. Oh, look at him go. Wow. I think, you know what?
The best you can get.
Okay. Okay, moving on. What are you drinking anything right now? What did you crack open, JVL?
I cracked open the Hardywood Christmas pancakes while we did the Bulwark live stream.
Are you eating or drinking? What is happening here?
A little bit of both. It's like drinking a gingerbread man who has been soaked in maple syrup first thing in the morning.
Sounds delicious.
It's wonderful.
It's something like
percent alcohol?
Drink it with a spoon.
I don't know, but I only drank about 2/3 of it before I had to stop because I was doing the big boy job over at the Bulwark and was directing traffic and hosting our live stream, which I think was a very mediocre success.
People seem to like it. People seem to have a good time.
I do have a not a correction, just an elaboration. Listener and friend Ryan Shinkel informs us Achilles' death, as we know, we were talking about the Iliad last episode. Achilles' death is not recounted in Virgil or Homer. His funeral is mentioned in the Odyssey, where his ghost appears in the underworld, and the fall of Troy is described in Book 3 of the Aeneid. So there you go. A little bit of classical education for you.
Look at that. Look at there that. You go.
There you go.
How about that?
What about Clash of the Titans? Is that a book?
Yes. That was Homer's third poem.
Ah, thank you, Sonny.
I remember yes. Homer writing about the robotic owl and how they yes. would have.
You're talking about the original. You're talking about the original Clash of the Titans.
Just stanzas and stanzas about releasing the Kraken.
Right, that was the owl. He would make Burgess Meredith.
And thus the Kraken roared and splashed into the water.
Burgess Meredith and Harry Hamlin. It's a Harry Hamlin.
Harry Hamlin.
Harry Hamlin. Okay. That is all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, compliments, tweet us at Sonny Bunch, at Victorina Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Just go to subbeacon.com. We are there. Tell your friends. Until next time.
Also, on the Patreon-only edition this week, you're going to get... John is actually coming in to do a three-hour solo show as a rebuttal to the West Side Story takes. Yeah. So we're going to have 3 hours of John explaining why we're wrong totally yes. about West Side
we
Story.
Can, you know, I can intro it, and then I can go out, you know?
Just let him go.
Go out, have lunch.
Have lunch, come back.
Have lunch, martini lunch.
He can break, come he back. Break it down line by
and then
line.
He'll be and then he could talk. When I come back, I'll be talking about Rita Moreno now and then.
Yes. One thing I would like to mention is that in the comments section at the Patreon, there was an unprecedented amount of dong talk in the comments.
What,
just
my
people
sauce?
Talking about dongs.
From my prick just dong? People, you mean from that?
No, not prick dong. Just dong.
Really?
Kevin Bacon dong. Bacon
oh,
dong.
Oh, yeah,
debate,
of course.
There was
course,
a debate over how big Kevin Bacon's dong yes. was yeah. with one of our listeners, Carrie, saying that, you know, he's seen a million dongs that are bigger than that. You know, another listener, anyway, it was going back and forth. It was a hot I think the SSEU is going to talk about it on their
is
show.
This, is this like the guy, one of these guys who went to a high school where everybody showered together in one big room?
Don't know.
Or something?
Don't know. Look, I don't know. I mean, look, I don't know. I'm just saying that, like, if you want in on the action, if you want in on the hot dong action, not prick dong again, dong dong, you got to get to the comments section.
I will
and
say
sign
this.
Up.
I told you. I saw that movie with my little sister when she was in college.
Yes.
And as uncomfortable as it was watching Denise Richards and Neve Campbell go to town on each other with my little sister sitting next to me, hearing the little gasp that she made when Kevin Dong knocked the shower door open. Kevin Dong. Kevin Bacon yes. knocked the shower door open when he turned around. It really stripped me of all my illusions, and that was...
That was yeah. The
was
you know
great.
They did apparently they had multiple takes. They had multiple takes, and they decided
well, he had
that
it. It took him a couple tries to hit it just right to generate enough force to knock the thing open.
Yeah,
you know, because again, it's a medium sized dong, according to some of the listeners.
Yeah, no, that's
in the comments.
Normal.
I'm sure it was fine.